Hi there! Welcome to the Raconteur Games Campfire. My name is Nicholas Laborde, and I'm the founder and chief storyteller. If you aren't familiar, raconteur is an old French term for storyteller. We tell stories. Sometimes this leads us to other storytellers, and in those cases, we gather around the campfire Louisiana style. If you aren't familiar with how we tell stories in Louisiana, it goes a little like this. We talk about everything except the purpose of conversation, eventually get around to what we need, and at the end, everyone walks away thinking, I don't know what I got out of that conversation, but I'm glad that I had it. Without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest, a former public servant for games in Austin, Texas, turned nomadic freelance producer and bagel blogger, Joe Lambert. Joe, how are you today?
I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me, Nick.
I am so excited to have you here. It took a year, but we finally got you.
Yeah, finally, now that I am working for myself and calling the shots for myself, I didn't have to fill out a bunch of HR paperwork to try to get on a podcast. So, hooray.
Hooray. I mean, look, you've got nomadic desert sabbatical things. You've got bagels. You've got the podcast. I mean, things look pretty good right now.
Everything's coming up, Lambert.
Oh, man.
Sort of.
I love it.
Yeah, all it took to get on this podcast was to move to the desert and quit my day job and start making bagels.
I mean, look, we don't judge the path that you forged to get here. Okay, Joe, so question number one. We start off with very, very deep questions here. Why do you make games? Why are you in this industry?
Oh, man. So the very short answer is actually just straight up library school and me going to library school. But that makes no sense to basically everybody listening. So I will give you the longer answer.
Absolutely.
As well. So I've always loved video games. And, you know, I started playing games, like, I guess since I was like 5 or 6. I remember my best friend Kelty had a Nintendo and I'd go play over there. I remember getting in trouble sneaking downstairs after during slumber parties to play some Mario. My family finally bought a Super Nintendo when I was like in second grade, and I'm pretty sure Donkey Kong Country led to me needing glasses. But video games were a very important part of my life, but I never ever thought space that I could work in. I hear this a lot from a lot of people, I guess my age, or a lot of people who kind of found their way into games and not in like a very orthodox way. But I feel like a lot of us like played games and had games be this incredibly important part of our life. But none of us were like, oh yeah, humans make those. Like the people that also have like storied backgrounds and like interesting life experiences, they're the ones who make these projects. Like video games were just kind of, you know, in my life. So I never ever thought about making games. And then, you know, in my 20s, I studied film and I went to film school and worked in, I was like a lowly production assistant for a while, living in Los Angeles, doing, you know, the scrappy stuff like, you know, getting coffee for people, getting sushi.
Getting bagels for people?
You know what? I actually did bagels for people a lot.
I'm seeing a thread here.
You know, it's funny enough. We could talk about bagels in a bit, but I didn't. I don't know if my PA background was maybe a small catalyst in me getting to know the bagel. Anyway, long story short, with my production assistant career, I loved working in, like, on sets and stuff, but I realized I wasn't passionate about it long term. And so from there, I was like, well, what am I doing with my life? And I decided to go to grad school and study information science. And particularly, I went to grad school originally because I wanted to be – I was really interested in film archives. Working in film, I was like, oh, I'm – passionate about film, but I'm not passionate about working on a set, and I'm really passionate about film history. Those are jobs. So I'll go to grad school and learn how to be a film archivist. And I did. I very obviously am not a film archivist, but being in grad school kind of like that gave me an opportunity to learn a lot about a lot of different industries. For those who don't know, like, an information science degree is essentially what you get to become a librarian or an archivist. And those industries kind of like run the gamut now in terms of like, you know, fields to work in. Like there's so like, grad school was kind of an amazing space for me because it, I got the opportunity to get to meet a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds, like, you know, people who, had worked in, you know, people like myself who had been in film, or people who worked in, academia, or people who were teachers or lawyers, or, people who had worked at, you know, just in tech, like all these different fields, like fit really well in information science. Anyway, in my time there, I kind of gravitated more towards like information management and like digital libraries and digital collections. But I also, you know, one of my friends in grad school was my colleague George Royer, who was a former lawyer at the time working on his master's. And we became friends, and we also became friends with some of the video game, some of the folks who work in the video game industry in Austin. And I guess in my last year of grad school, it would have been my last year. Me and George, and then our other friend, Jason, who was a contractor for EA at the time in Austin, we would just talk about things that we were passionate about and talk about video games and talk about projects that we wish existed in the universe. And funny enough, my last semester of grad school, I was in that space trying to figure out what I do next. And I should also note, like, when I came to grad school, I was like, all right, I'm going to be in Austin for 2 years, then I'm going to take whatever like cool archivist job I can find. And I'm like, I'm getting out of here and going to go be an archivist somewhere. But then that last semester, we just started talking about games and started talking about stuff. And like one thing after another, like we kind of put the pieces together of like, oh, hey, if we wanted to work on a video game, we actually have the resources available to work on a game. Like, and that was something I never, again, like, you know, growing up and being into games, I never ever was like, oh, I can make a video game. Cool, cool, cool. And I guess I had that realization when I was 24 in grad school. It was like, oh, hey, we have the technology available to us to make a game. Why don't we just do that? So that's how I kind of ended up in games. Was like, I realized this when I reflect on this, had I not gone to the School of Information, had I not gone to pursue a degree in library science, I'm not so sure I'd be working in games.
Isn't that crazy how we just all come from such interesting and unique backgrounds when it comes to making games?
Yeah, and it's so, I mean, it still kind of slays me. I remember that last semester of school, we were talking about a potential project, which ultimately became, we started a game studio called White Whale Games. It was me, George Royer, and Jason Rosenstock at the time. The project that we just kept talking about, like in like the hypothetical, ultimately became our like prog rock fantasy game, God of Blades. And you know, I never ever like go a few years before then, never ever in a million years would I have thought that I'd be doing something in games through library school. And I think also my department, when I wrapped up my degree and I got my master's, the School of Information at UT, one thing I will say that I really appreciate about that program is that they really want to see their students have great careers. And I will also say though, when I graduated, like they're like, so what are you doing now? And I was like, well, I think I'm starting up a video game company with George and our other friend Jason, and I think we're gonna make a video game. And they were like, no, you're not gonna do that. here's a list of other jobs you need to apply for. And like on one end, like I think now, just like since then, like that would have been like 2011. I think that they understand it. Like my department understands a little bit better, like what we were doing, but I feel like there might be kind of the, how can I put this? I feel like, library science, at least at the time, is not like a very like wasn't intensely risk-taking from an entrepreneurial standpoint, maybe, if that makes sense. Like, they were like, that seems like you guys are going to fail and seems like you're going to not be able to pay off your student loans. So here's a bunch of other jobs you should apply for. And I was like,
thanks for the vote of confidence.
Yeah, which is hilarious because then once we did ship our game and everything, like then there was like on the school information page, there'd be like little blurbs that'd be like, oh, like iSchool, we called it the iSchool grad Joe Lammert and George Royer like releasing this game. Like it's like, oh, now you're our friends. Now you support us. The department actually, like, I really do appreciate that they like really want to help their students find work and everything too. But I think like at the time, I think they just didn't understand like how one could go into a degree and
not use
come
it.
Out. Yeah. And come out working on a video game. Well, you know, the interesting thing is like, I realized so much of my video game career or like any of the projects I've done over the course of like the past like 5-6 years, so much of it does actually like fall into the work that I did in grad school, because like so much of it is about like, you know, user experience and like doing stuff with like usability and data management and understanding the player. Like all these things like totally fall in line with a lot of information school stuff. So thanks school of information, you helped me succeed.
Well, I think that is, in my view of education, someone once told me a long time ago, so this would be like early 2000s, so this is, you know, way before you could Google everything in your pocket like we can now. But someone once told me the benefit of a degree is not knowing the information, but knowing how to find the information. And I feel that is what education is about. It's especially grad school, I would argue it's more about the rigor and the discipline and the process more than the outcome of receiving the degree.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think that like that degree in itself too, like really made me realize too, just how valuable, the role of, you know, somebody help, like just how valuable it is to organize information and how valuable, like having a reference for information, is in this world and how like valuable, like a reference librarian is, AKA real life Google, you know,
real world like, Google. Whoa!
Like a reference librarian is literally a Google personified. Like it is just a person who will answer your question and find resources and curate something for you to, like to better aid you. So you're not just overwhelmed with tons of information, of which like 95% of it might be just total trash. So
that's in a way thing about librarians. I'm just going to say for 1 second, people think librarians are the cute little old lady that's worked there for 40 years. No, they are very qualified.
They're so dope. And the fact that sometimes I have to tell people, I mean, so many people don't even realize librarians have master's degrees. Oh, like yeah. You have to get a dang master's
to
become
a
librarian.
You have a master's degree most of the time in library science or something very close to it to work at any library in pretty much any position.
Oh, totally. And then also I will say like my most recent work before I got back into freelance, working at the Texas Film Commission as their animation and video game liaison, that in a way so much of my information school background like came into play, because that role in itself, like my very, very nebulous description that I would tell people too, is like my role was to foster and promote the games industry in the state of Texas. And like, that could look like a million things. It's totally like, you know, a very much a choose your own adventure type thing, because that's a very vague description. But a lot of it, I think, was just like kind of this combination of my experience working in libraries, like throughout my grad school career, and then also my experience working in games and being essentially like a public resource for that, and be like answering any questions about the industry to constituents or just anybody who reached out to our office. Like I, like it definitely was very much kind of it was a reference librarian for games role in a way.
That's awesome. You know, most people might say reference librarian for games. What do those things have to do with each other? But that's awesome.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, like there's so many, I think just there's so much, misinformation about what the games industry looks like, especially in 2017, because I mean, it looks like so many different things. Like very obviously, you know, just like the, like a person who works in video games, like there's not just like one trope of like what a person in video games looks like. Like, I think like when I first started at the Film Commission, you know, a lot of times people were like, oh, so like you work with like a bunch of nerds who like hide in a basement and make video games. And it's like,
No,
that's definitely not what the games industry looks like. So a big part of my job too is just like kind of informing the public of like, oh, hey, here's, did you know in your backyard here in Austin, Texas, or when I lived in Austin, Texas, that like, you know, Austin had, you know, this huge games industry, both like AAA and then also indie games. And frankly, before I even found myself in the games industry, I had no idea. That actually also is maybe one reason why I work in games, is that I just happened to be very fortunate to be living in Austin at the time. And Austin just had this incredibly vibrant indie community that really was supportive and excited and nurturing and just really welcoming for people who, you know, had never worked in games before.
I think that is a perfect answer to that question.
Thanks. It kind of went all over the map.
Everyone does for the first question. It's almost like a test. Like, will they be concise or not? It sets the stage for the whole rest of the podcast. So no pressure. You've already done the hard work.
Great. Phew. All right.
All right, Joe. Question number two. What is your most vivid memory about working in this industry? This can be good. This can be bad. This can be something formative or just something that was little and it gave you some happy thoughts for an afternoon. Most vivid memory.
Oh, man. No pressure. Here's what is the most vivid and
what is the defining moment of your life so far, Joe? Please share with the class.
Okay. So I think probably I have like, there's like a few moments that like, I think were very defining to keep me working in games and to keep me just like really loving the community that I worked with. I think one of them actually, if I'm actually like articulating a moment and not just like, not like a process that like, you know, like very obviously like working on my very first project, which would have been God of Blades, back in 2011 and 2012, like that whole experience was like incredibly important to me. But like one very distinct memory I have from that project, you know, I guess it would have been one of the parties we actually had, one of the events we had for our project. We had a party during South by Southwest in 2012. Yeah, it was 2000. I'm trying to think of the timeline of stuff. Yeah, we had a party for our game God of Blades before it shipped, and that might sound like kind of like a really shitty answer to be like a party, but I'll give you a little bit more context. So at White Whale, I kind of my role, you know, as you do in indie games, you collect a million different tasks. And a lot of mine was more like in the realm of business development and marketing and PR and all these things that I was not trained in any capacity. And so throughout that whole year, also being a just generally anxious person, like I was crippled with a lot of just like self-doubt and imposter syndrome and a lot of like just kind of questioning what I was doing in games. Like as much as like I loved that community, like I just had so much self-doubt and like had so many question marks of like, well, I'm not programming, so I guess, am I really working on a game? I don't know. But so much of that year, like I went to a lot of events in Austin, went to a lot of, stuff about, you know, game development. I went to, you know, Juegos Rancheros, which is a indie collective in Austin, Texas. They have monthly meetups. I went to those and talked to people. And so much of my work was just like, just talking to people about our game and like pitch, just talking about our project and not so much even pitching it, but just like, just talking about it. And like part of my role was really kind of seeing like what lit up with people and like what made them excited in our game. So like that project in itself was very much kind of or was very heavily influenced by like pulp fantasy, old paperbacks from like the 70s and 80s, and like Frank Frazetta, like crazy prog rock fantasy art, and like talking to people about just like old weird fantasy, and like hearing them get really excited about books that inspired them, movies that inspired them and whatnot. Like, I realized that was, you know, kind of the big, like the big niche selling point of our game. Like, our game looked like, the way I ultimately described it was like, it looked like, I'd say like, picture the coolest, like the dopest van that has like this amazing wizard mural on the side of it. And that's the aesthetic of our game, which at the time didn't really exist on like iOS or Android or anything. So like people were really drawn to that in a way because it just was so weird. And the other thing we did, like, you know, when we started this game company, we didn't like, you know, all of us, save for our artists, like none of us had really worked in the industry before. So, you know, we were just like, we were guessing how to do everything. And on my end, I felt like part, like what I am good at, I'm good at organizing things. I'm good at planning things. I'm good at planning events. And so throughout the year, we had like a few events that were just about this weird video game we were working on. And through the goodness of a lot of the Austin community, we were able to make that happen. Like we had like no money, like we were living off of like sweet potatoes and ramen, but we did have a lot of like cool social capital in Austin. So just because, you know, we like our crew knew a lot of cool people in the town. And I feel like a lot of Austin just like, you know, I like to hold on to like, or I like to hold on to the hope that, you know, a lot of the communities I've been a part of, people want to see people succeed, and like people want to help people, and like people want to, you know, kind of do the, like, just help each other out and not get like,
not get competitive, just build each other up.
Yeah. There's the word. Yeah. Not get competitive. Like just, you know, realize that, you know, if we all support each other, like we can all succeed. So anyway, so going back to like South by Southwest that year, like it was, you know, South by Southwest is this absurd, ridiculous event, you know, in Austin that's, you know, runs the gamut of like video games, music, and film and blah, 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 blah. And most events are just like, you know, super corporate, tens of thousands of dollars to put together, et cetera, et cetera. We had no money, but there was like a lovely dive bar in East Austin called Shangri-La, who, you know, we just talked to them. We were like, hey, can we have a party at some point during South By? And there's like, yeah, if you bring people in here, like, sure, that'll be great. So we put on this party with like a scrappy as hell budget, like no dollars. Like, and so I think this is the thing that really like made this so like such an important event for me. So this is me, like I was planning an event for $0, maybe a little bit of dollars to like have some buttons produced and like some stickers and stuff. But then like, we put together this party. A lot of times the draw at South by parties is like free drinks. We definitely did not have free drinks because we had no money. But our draw was, hey, here's like this really weird prog rock fantasy game, that's being made here in Austin. We're going to project it on a screen and like, you can play it and like, come talk to us. And like, we also want to hear what you're working on and why you're here at South By. And it turned out to be this like absurdly amazing event. It was like the whole night was just like super hopping. People were really happy. And I met people from so many different, like I met a bunch of game developers, but I also met like a lot of musicians, and I met a lot of artists who were in town. And somewhere in there, like that was just like, that was a really validating experience for me. Like, and I guess going back to saying like most vivid memory, it was really important for me because I think it really, just like seeing enthusiasm in people for the work we were doing, and like seeing people have enthusiasm, like asking questions about like my role and like stuff that I was doing there, like when I was like crippled with self doubt and stuff, and seeing like all this stuff, like, you know, be like actually like in a physical space at an event, at a party, like really kind of, I think, relit this like fire in me while I still was like navigating my like, you know, imposter syndrome and everything, being like, oh, hey, like I helped put on this event. More people know about our game. More people are really excited for it. More people are like ready to get it when it comes out. And so like, that was, I think, just like people celebrating just like the spirit and like the, I guess the moxie of like a really scrappy indie game company, like really, really moved me. So that was like, I guess maybe, yeah, that's my answer for you. A party.
Well, it sounds like a party.
I should just have that. I was just gonna say, I should just have like the short answer, like the short answers. Why do you make games? Library school. What's your most vivid memory?
A party. I love it. Well, again, this is why we gather around the campfire, because there's so many stories to tell and people come from such strange backgrounds in games. And that's what makes this industry worth being in. It's the games are cool, yeah, but it's the people and all their stories and all their experiences and just it's going to sound dramatic, bearing witness to how people are just so damn weird and how we manage
to
make things out of that.
And also just like realizing, like, I think the thing that has really kept me within games and really kept me in this community, like, you know, I mean, there's definitely, I very obviously, as I'm talking about my experiences in games, I know I a lot of times kind of have this like very Pollyanna, like rose colored lenses, like, oh, like the community's so good. Like, don't get me wrong. There's definitely so much toxicity in so much of games. Like, we don't need, like, that goes without saying, but there's also like, I still just see like so much good in so many of like, particularly in a lot of like the indie community, like that event, like that party, the South by party we had, like just people having enthusiasm and people asking us questions and like, and our team, you know, getting to know people, like musicians and artists and stuff that like in some way or another kind of both like, you know, some of the people that I met at that event, like have ended up being friends still, or, you know, were people that we ended up working with. And it just like, I think there was just a lot of like earnestness and sincerity that I really, really value.
And that's why we work in games. Credits roll.
The end.
The end. Well, we're only 2 out of 5 questions in. So this is a perfect segue into the wild card segment, which is where we ask every guest a different question or set of questions. And I'm going to pick on you, Joe, and ask you several, but they're all very important.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
I'm so scared.
I'm going to ask you 4. So there's technically going to be like 8 or 9 questions on this episode, but they're all good questions.
Oh, man.
And I'm
well,
pretty biased
I know
I wrote the questions, but I think they're pretty good.
Well, I know I also can ramble, so hopefully I'll try to keep it as succinct as possible and not turn this into like a 5-hour
podcast.
Okay,
so the short version, the library, the party, and question number 3.
Okay.
First wild card question. If you could put a billboard anywhere and write anything on it, what would you say?
Wow. Okay. So, man, that's a great question. So like my first approach to this, is probably going to err more on the ridiculousness or on the ridiculous side of things.
That's good. That's valid.
And I'm going to feel fine about this because, you know, if I try to really like, I feel like if I try to give you an answer that's like really moving and like really just compelling, like I feel like frankly it's gonna be kind of bullshit, like I don't think
give us the honest answer.
Yeah, so to me, like when I think of like my favorite billboards and my favorite like just, you know, like I guess things that you see within you know, a town or a community. And like right now, like I'm currently living in Marfa, Texas, which I think if I'm there are definitely like maybe like 3 billboards here. Maybe there's more. There's like 1 billboard for the Dairy Queen. That might be it. No, there's some billboards outside of town too for a hotel, but there's like no billboards around here. So now it's like really jarring when I go into a city and I see a ton of billboards. But anyway, my favorite types of billboards or things are the things that are just so nonsensical and just so weird that kind of gives me joy. So I feel like, you know what, if I could have a billboard anywhere, and have it say whatever I want, I think I would do something bagel related, because you don't see a lot of bagel billboards. And it would just be something incredibly just nonsensical, just not really promoting anything particular. It wouldn't promote my bagel project. I think it just would say, like, bagels, you want them. And just be like some really beautiful bagels. And my hope would be people would be like, yeah, you know what? I do want a bagel.
I do want bagels. Thank you, billboard. Thank you.
Well, like, my favorite billboards are, or my favorite things are the ones that, like, where you don't entirely understand, like, what the story is behind how they ended up there.
Environmental story.
Yeah. Like, so I'd love people to just be like, why is there a billboard for bagels in the middle of, like, this random suburban town where there's no bagels? Like, how did that end up there? So I'm thinking in particular, I drive a lot, very obviously, living in the middle of nowhere. So I do see a lot of billboards, like, off of I-10 or, like, on the road and stuff. And, like, my favorite billboards are the ones that are just like there's this great one. There's a, tourist destination, I guess, in, like, maybe Arizona off of I-10 that's called The Thing. And you just keep driving for hundreds of miles and you keep seeing this billboard being like, The Thing is coming. And you're like, what is The Thing? Like, I still don't know what The Thing is.
I thought there was some brand into this.
There's a place to go see The Thing. And I guess I could Google what The Thing is.
No, you have to go to The Thing. You can't.
I feel like
Google
I have
it.
To. Totally. But I like that those billboards make me so happy when I'm so bored on I-10. So I think that's why, like, I just would want, like, a little piece of joy of just, like, you know, bagels are actually, yeah, I would put this billboard in the middle of, like, just in the middle of nowhere off of, like, a major interstate, where, you know, you've been driving for like 10 hours and you're almost about to pass out and you just see a billboard that says, like, bagels, you want them. You know, might just give you a little bit of joy in life.
I love it.
Maybe I'd work on the tagline a little bit, but I definitely would have a really great picture of some bagels.
We could workshop it, but it's doable.
Yeah, but it might just even just say, actually, maybe it wouldn't even say you want them. It might just say bagels and have a bunch of pictures
just
of bagels.
Period.
Confuse people even more. If I come into some extra cash in life, which, you know, and need to just waste it on a thing, I might just make this billboard happen.
I'd love to burn the money that I just spent time earning. I would put it in this form.
I would put it in bagel billboard form in the middle of nowhere, not promoting any actual specific bagel, just the idea of bagels.
I love it. I love it. So, speaking of money to burn, that's a perfect segue into wild card number two.
Oh, wow.
This one is interesting. I've never asked this one on the podcast before, but I'm excited. You're the guinea pig.
Okay.
Again, no pressure. What $100 or less purchase has most positively impacted your life in recent memory?
Whew, that's a great question. And I want to have a really, really good answer. So I'm trying to think on this. The funny thing is, like, in the past, like, particularly in the past few years, I've been really, like, anti-buying stuff. Like, I really have been, like, trying to buy less and less things in life. My answer is probably going to be something baking related. I feel like I'm trying to think, what have I bought? You said in the past year?
In the past year.
Oh, man.
This could be paying for anything. Doesn't have to be a specific thing.
Oh, paying for anything. Oh, man, when I come up with the answer, it's going to just, like, light up in my brain and make me so excited. I know it is. I'm just like, what have I bought this year?
Well, in all fairness, 2017 was about 10 years long, so there's a lot.
That's very true. Well, also, I will say, too, 2017 was an interesting year for me because moving from Austin, Texas, and moving to Marfa, Texas, I got rid of a lot of stuff. And I still, like, you know, I have a storage space in Austin, and part of me is like, why do I have that storage space? Like, I don't care if I lose anything in there, but I'm just so over stuff. Okay, I think I might have an answer that's in terms of like the stuff that I've bought. So I kind of have like, this is going to be kind of like a really, I feel like this isn't as exciting an answer as I was like hoping to come up with, but, I just recently bought myself a new tent for camping and I'm like so excited that so now that I'm kind of back in like this like nomadic lifestyle, like I'm back in kind of a space where I'm mostly working in freelance, and that gives me a lot of opportunity to travel and stuff. I, especially over the course of 2017, which to what you were saying was like an incredibly long, fatiguing year, I realized anytime I had time off, and this is kind of the catalyst that also like led me coming out to moving to Marfa. Anytime I had time off, I would go to West Texas, or I would go to the Southwest, I'd go to New Mexico. I'd go to places that like would take me a long time to drive to. And, you know, I'd stay either in a scrappy Airbnb or I'd bring my tent. And, I realized like having a tent, like I keep my tent in my car, and it's not that like, I have this image in my head sometimes, like, you know, I keep all my camping equipment in my car, and in my head, I'm like, you know what? I do that. So if I really just like out of nowhere, just want to camp, like I don't even have to try. Like I just need to just drive somewhere and then I can just set up and I'm good to go. And it's not like I've ever done that because I'm like a super zealous planner. So like any time I plan,
but the idea is there.
And like, and I, it's funny. So like, I didn't really get into camping until like, I guess somewhere in this past decade, like really in my 20s, I hated camping in my teens. I never ever tent camped until I was an adult. But you know, I bought a tent like a few years ago and, held up really well. It was great. It was just like a super reasonable, like, you know, what they would call a 3-person tent. That's maybe a 2-person tent. If y'all like that's how they're always like, you know, they're marketed like, oh, you can fit 3 people in there. And it's like, can you know, like maybe if we're all,
can you really?
Like if we're all just like lined up to each other, I guess.
How old are the people in this?
Right. I know. This is what I'm always wondering. Yeah. 3-person tent is like the perfect size tent for me and my dog. Maybe it works for like me and one other person if like we're cool to be in close quarters, but like so anyway, like I recently, one of my trips, like one of the things I love about being out here now in West Texas is when I do have some time to like go travel somewhere, it's not that hard to travel somewhere like incredibly beautiful. So anyway, a couple months ago, I went on like a weekend trek to Guadalupe Mountains National Park, which is a few hours from here. It's this beautiful space, has like the tallest point in Texas, which I've climbed before and felt very proud of. And then later on I Googled it and I'm like, oh, the tallest point in Texas is really not that tall, but but it still gave me a sense of pride. Anyway, I went over there to camp and I was like so excited. I'm like, right, like I just like, it's just for me, like being camping is like such a great way to like decompress and like such a great way to just recalibrate, especially when I'm doing a lot of work with computers and stuff. It's like the opposite of using a computer. So I get out there and I'm like, oh, this is going to be so great. And I realized like my tent, like for whatever reason, I had lost like one of the poles, and it just,
oh no.
Oh, it was the worst. Cause I was feeling just this ecstasy of like being out there and like, and then
it was going great. You were vibing. It was awesome.
And then I'm just like, well, fuck. And then just everything wrong seemed to happen. And my trip was still lovely, but I didn't get to camp in the way that I wanted to. So then I come back to Marfa and I'm like, okay, well, I need to buy another tent. And I spent forever researching tents. But then I realized like my little 3-person, like $50 Coleman tent just made me so happy. So I just, and I will say too, that one had been on like a long run. In addition to like losing a pole, like it had like survived a rainstorm in Marfa actually this past summer before I officially lived here. I came out to Marfa and I camped, and that we had torrential downpour for days on end, which then, you know, my tent smelled like mildew. So it had a good run. It finally needed to be removed. So, but after all this research, I was like, you know what? Like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm buying this like $50 Coleman 3-person tent again. And I'm so happy I did. So like my tent just makes me really happy. And like, it's just I'm thinking, even though it's absurdly cold right now, I'm like, oh yeah, like maybe next Monday or Tuesday I can go camping somewhere. And that'll be like a really great way. I'm working on a couple of freelance projects right now and like kind of been super busy this week. So I'm like, that'll be like really lovely to like just sit and read my book, hang out with my dog, and also not have phone reception. So I like haven't.
It is really nice to not be able to use your phone sometimes.
Oh, and that's.
And I feel like sometimes we have to be in the situation where we are forced to not be able to use it. Like, oh, there's no service, or oh, I'm on a trip, or I'm on my honeymoon, something like that. Like a purpose where you know you're not going to use your phone. And it's just so nice.
Totally. And I think that kind of is part of the reason why I live out here too. I mean, Marfa in itself, like we do have phone reception and we do have internet. Though I will say, actually, I just moved here, I guess 2 months ago. And since I've moved out here, like there have been 3 different times where like AT&T has gone down and like there's just no, like there's no phone service at all. Like no one has phone service for days. We're just like, oh, we don't have AT&T right now. Okay. That sucks.
Cool.
But in a weird way, like, yeah, it is nice. Like going to Guadalupe Mountains, no reception. Like there's no way like you're going to be in touch with anyone. And you tell your, or Big Bend, you're just like, hey, I'm going to Big Bend, FYI, in case you don't hear back from me, like make sure you let people know that I was down there.
But my last known whereabouts, if you know, it's probably not going to happen, but yeah, I'm very likely to never be found if I go missing.
Right. Right. Well, for what it's worth. Yeah. I'm actually toying with going, finally trekking down to Big Bend sometime in the next couple weeks. And that'll mean like, yeah, I'll have no reception. But I will have like my tent. And yeah, I definitely, when you asked that question, I didn't, as I was like trying to simmer, I thought I would totally go to like a something food related since I bake all the time. But like, I realized just like having a tent like is so like freeing to me because it's so I still am like a very scrappy person when it comes to like, you know, I it's not that I'm not in the same like sweet potato ramen space that I was when like White Whale Games started, but I'm like, for me, if I am like, oh, I want to go on a weekend trip, I'm not going to be like, oh, let's just throw hundreds upon hundreds of dollars onto a thing. I'm like, oh no, I can like just go camping this weekend. It'll be great. And I'll be so happy.
Absolutely. Nothing wrong with doing it simpler.
Yeah, totally.
It doesn't always have to be a fancy, extravagant 4-star hotel, you know? Get your dog, get your tent, go out to no cell reception and hope to not get murdered.
Oh, right. That's the dream to me. I mean, yeah, I love, don't get me wrong, I love being fancy, but I also love being scrappy as fuck and just like buying some beef jerky, buying some marshmallows. What a great meal.
That's going to be your epitaph. I like being scrappy as fuck.
Oh, that's 100% my epitaph. I'm like scrappy as fuck. That's like my LinkedIn subheading or should be.
I love it.
That's my secret LinkedIn subheading. Just like when you're looking at my LinkedIn, just know that.
I'll make sure to forward this soundbite to all the future, you know, recruiters and freelance project managers.
As I'm looking for work, yeah.
Okay, so wild card number 3 and 4 are actually very short.
Okay,
but they're going to be very passionate answers, I hope.
Uh-oh, I hope so, yeah.
I want you to be comfortable when I ask you this, Joe. I want you to name your most controversial stance on Gilmore Girls.
Oof! I'm really honored that you picked a Gilmore Girls question for me. My most controversial stance. Okay, yeah, I have one.
Okay, let's
so
hear it.
This is going to matter to maybe 1% of the people listening to your podcast, by the way. But to that 1%, hi. My most controversial stance. So like, I've rewatched Gilmore Girls a couple times as an adult. And I realized, like, the first time I watched Gilmore Girls, I was incredibly Team Jess, like so many people are. The second time I rewatched, I was like, Jess is kind of the worst, and all he's doing is negging Rory. And sure, he reads and stuff, but he's kind of awful. And I kind of started to become Team Logan by the end.
Ooh.
And
that is controversial.
Oh, which to people who have no idea what the hell we're talking about, Gilmore Girls.
There are a lot of boys and they present conflicting situations for the narrative at hand.
100%. Logan is still problematic, don't get me wrong, but I feel like as an adult, I was like, why am I getting drawn to this, like, this snobby rich boy who's just like, just comes from privilege? But I feel like ultimately when I watched it, I mean, I think there's a lot of things that I took away from this through my 20s, being like, why don't I want the bad boy in a motorcycle jacket who reads Kerouac and, like, you know, is, you know, mean but has a heart of gold? Like, I think part of my takeaway was like, oh, I think I'm tired of, like, mean guys. Though I will also say Logan also is a bit, like, he also has kind of, like, some negging things as well, too. But, like, anytime he calls Rory Ace, I'm like, oh, God, really? Do we have to, like...
Do we have to go through this again? Really?
Ugh, come on, man. No, I think that is my most controversial take, is that maybe I'm kind of Team Logan, which I think part of it is, like, I think ultimately at the end, like, I think he was trying to, like, pull out the best in Rory. So I think, like, you know, in the latter seasons when she's just like, oh, someone was mean to me. Actually, I guess his dad was mean to her. So she's like, I'm dropping out of school and I'm not gonna work. And I'm just gonna live in this pool house with my really affluent grandparents. And I think after a while, like, Logan was just like, like, that's, come on, like, you're better than that. Even though I know a lot of people me saying that, a lot of people will be like, no, it was Jess that made Rory stop living that life and get back into school. There you go. This is literally relevant to, like, 1% of
yours. It is relevant to 100% of the people listening.
Right. It's to having this conversation right now.
At this point, then they're probably not leaving.
That's very true.
Welcome.
Yeah, that's probably my most controversial one.
Okay. I agree with you. Mine that is somewhat controversial is, I think April did nothing wrong, and there is no reason to hate on April.
Oh, no, I totally agree, actually, 100% with that, too. And that also was, like, that was another one first round. Like, I hated April with a passion. And then the second round I watched, I was like, you know what? Like, this kid got thrown into this universe, and she made the best of it, and she's just a kid who just really wants to learn and, like, is curious and... Why do we all hate her? Like, we're all really monster people for hating this, like, this 12-year-old. Is like, what is wrong with us?
Gilmore Girls brings up the most important questions in life, truly.
Well, the other thing too, I realized, like, I was thinking about this before the podcast, because I realized so much of, like, my interest and pursuits, like, are the things that, like, really move me, is, like, I'm really interested in a lot of, like, especially TV shows, I guess, like, that keep me coming back, is I really love a good ensemble, and I really love shows that, like, really highlight a community. So, like, you know, like, I feel like Gilmore Girls does that pitch perfectly. Parks and Rec, even, like, Cheers is, like, one of my favorite shows of all time, which, granted, the community is literally a bar, but there's, like, just such a great ensemble. But, like, I love the community of Gilmore Girls, but, like, every time I rewatch it again, I also am just like, man, these leads, like, Lorelai and Rory, are kind of mean and awful. And they're also, every single problem of theirs is just solved by privilege. Like, every issue they have. Yeah.
Not objectively the best people. I mean, this is a whole other, we could have an entire podcast series on that subject.
Right. This is now a Gilmore Girls podcast, I think.
Welcome to the Gilmore Girls Campfire.
Yeah, it's a Gilmore Girls Campfire. God. No, it's, like, I watch it, I'm like, what is, like, they're so mean to, like, people in the service industry. That's one of the things I'm very hyper aware of, where I'm just like, how, Lorelai, you work in a hotel. Why are you so mean to people? And then also, yeah, all their issues are just ultimately, usually the conclusion is, you know, Lorelai's super rich parents help them out with something in some way. Like, there's some sort of negotiation there, but so I'm like, why do I like this show? It's all about privilege. But I don't know, like, the ensemble, just something about it is like it's a, like, comfort food of community, I guess. That's like the community, like, that's, like, the thing that really draws me towards it.
I can tell that you've worked in any sort of marketing or biz capacity, because you always end with the perfect soundbite. Every question is always so succinctly summed up.
Well, I think in recent years especially, I've tried to be better about ending things instead of with so yeah. Though I still do that a lot. I don't know if I've said that at all this conversation, which is pretty amazing.
I think you
damn
unwell now. You've
damn
lost.
That's like, yeah, achievement unlocked, I guess. So yeah,
I love it. Okay, so the final wild card question. Okay, I will probably never ask someone four of these, but I decided to pick on you, so you win.
Thank you.
It's
an honor.
I mean, I have many questions, Joe, and these are only just a few of the questions, but these are the most important, pertinent questions for everyone listening. Final wild card question. What is your ideal bagel?
Oh, that one I can answer very quickly. I'm very much a bagel purist. Bagel perfection to me is an everything bagel with some like good cream cheese and really amazing lox. Super simple. That's just like perfection to me. One of my favorite memories in recent years was going to New York, I guess last year. My little sister lives up there. And also, since I bake bagels now, I actually also have the excuse of going up there for research, you know, quote unquote research. The last time I was in New York, I went and got bagels and then went to Russ and Daughter's and got some cured fish, and then just ate bagels and lox in the park, and it was the best.
That sounds delightful.
Yeah, I'm definitely of the like in terms of this whole like learning how to bake bagels, I definitely have had a lot, like anytime there's something bagel related on like BuzzFeed or something, it ends up inevitably on like my Facebook timeline or on like my Twitter. And I appreciate, like, I will say too, it's like, I super appreciate, like, I'm like, oh, people are thinking of me. That's super sweet. But like stuff like the rainbow bagel makes me livid because like, I don't want a crazy rainbow bagel. I don't want a cream cheese that's like full of sugar. I just want my everything bagel with cream cheese and lox. That's what I want. It's all I want.
There you go. Well, you figured out the ideal bagel. So, I mean, what else is there in life? I mean, everything else is secondary and simple.
Again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, I don't need to make my bagel crazy. Like, everything bagel is perfect. It's just like the perfect seasoning.
There you go. There you go. Again, those perfect soundbite endings.
100%. Yeah. No, people always ask, and you know, in my whole like bagel baking project, I definitely do experiment a little bit, but like, I just know like part of the conceit of my bagel project was there were just like, there's not really good bagels in Texas or like not in a lot of places. And I just want a really good traditional bagel. So
yeah. There you go. Sometimes it's just born out of necessity.
Totally. 100%.
Okay, so question number four. We're off of the wild card. We're back to the schedule now.
Gotcha. Phew, I survived. I was really scared of that wild card.
Oh, no. You survived. I think
I did go on a Gilmore Girls ramble, but...
It's okay. Those are always welcome.
Thanks.
Oh, man. Okay, so number four. This is a good one. What do you think is the greatest story ever told? It can be anything. It doesn't have to be a movie. It can be graffiti you saw in an alleyway. It could be a story someone told you in a gas station. It could be anything.
Oh, man. Well, again, like another like no pressure story too, though.
No
but
pressure.
It's like, no pressure. Just tell us the greatest in all of
just
existence.
Just tell us one of these things that's so important to the very fiber of your existence.
Yeah, well, you know, so I think in the same vein that like my very generic bagel billboard that I want to have off of I-10 in the middle of like New Mexico. I think my answer here, I'm just going to give you something kind of absurd because no one can stop me. Like I could give you a very like hero's journey answer about like something intensely biblical or like some, you know, Odyssey mythological thing. But guess what? No one can stop me. I can say crazy things here. So greatest story ever told. I'm going to go with the Muppet movie from 1979. and I'm going to tell you why.
Please,
I bet you didn't see that coming.
I did not. Please. I'm very curious for the answer now.
I think about this every now and then. And when I think about my life and like how I've kind of gotten into the space of like, of collecting a lot of different projects, working on a lot of different events with friends, getting into the indie game community. And I really think I think the Muppets in general, but really in particular, the Muppet movie really shaped a lot of how I view the world and how I view a lot of work. Have you seen the Muppet movie?
I want to say that I probably have, maybe never to completion, and probably as a child, so I have virtually no recollection of it.
Totally. Well, the other reason why I'm giving you this answer instead of something that is like very intensely like a very legit like heavy answer is that I know like
answer.
Yeah, this is a legit answer. This is a legit Joe Lammert answer. this is very me. If I try to give you another answer, I would just fail. So Muppet Movie definitely did a lot of things for me as a kid. It definitely gave me my very weird like sense of humor that very much stemmed from a lot of like 1970s-esque humor and actors and blah, blah, blah. But the general story of the Muppet Movie is essentially Kermit. It starts off with Kermit just playing his banjo in the swamp, singing Rainbow Connection. And then like a Hollywood producer just like literally is boating right by him and is like, hey, I'm trying to figure out how to get to Hollywood. Oh, hey, like you should audition for this frog role that's in Variety. And like Kermit's like, nah, I'm good. I'm here in the swamp. Like I'm pretty content. And this Hollywood guy is like, you should consider it. Like it'll be great. Like you'll make millions of people happy. And that's the catalyst for Kermit. Like, he's like, oh, make millions of people happy. Okay. Maybe I will go check this out. And on the way, he goes on this road trip and he picks up a bunch of other Muppets, meets a bunch of other Muppets, and they're all on the road to go to Hollywood. And it's kind of, you know, it's this ridiculous road trip. Maybe this is also why I love road trips and like being on the road. But it's also like, I realize the story is super absurd. And it's like, it's literally just about like this, the team of Muppets, like ending up in Hollywood. And spoiler alert, like they eventually do get to Hollywood. And they just like walk into an office of a big timey director, I think. Yeah, or like a big shot producer played by Orson Welles, who just suddenly is just like, oh, let's give this Kermit the Frog the standard rich and famous contract. And then from there, that's how the Muppets ended up in Hollywood. But the underlying thing here is that like Kermit's whole like motivation here is that he wants to make people happy and wants to just put on a good show and wants to like be, wants to be in a community of people who are doing really cool, fun things. And like for me and everything I do, I frame so much of it like as the Muppet Movie. Like when I've helped put on events for like indie game events and stuff, like I just think of, I have this lens in my brain that like looks at everybody as just like unique, interesting Muppets putting on their own interesting, fun project, and that everybody like together, like we can do like a really cool, fun thing together, but we're all, you know, unique and different and doing, you know, passionate about silly things and weird. And, but that's what makes us fun and interesting. And so, yeah, something about this whole, like the whole narrative of just like, going to Hollywood, not really for the part about being rich and famous, but to make people happy. Like that's the part that like I'm really drawn to. And the part about putting on a show with like your really talented and fun and interesting and slightly weird friends and doing it for the sake of like bringing some joy into the world. That has been like a very big motivating force, I guess, for me in a lot of ways. And in all my projects, like I think it's like that's sticking around in like indie games and like kind of being part of the Austin games community for a while, or I still actually consider myself part of that community, even though I live 7 hours away. Like, you know, we all have Twitter and Facebook and stuff. But so like that community, like I think we do great things when we just like want to help each other out and make each other happy and stuff. So, that's my, so, you know, greatest story ever told. The Muppet Movie.
Library Science, The Party, The Muppet Movie.
It's definitely, I will also like, as I'm trying to champion for The Muppet Movie too, I will tell you, if you watch it, like I've watched it at some point this year, And so there was a while, like, I was really in the thick of being, like, Jim Henson is a person I also, like, very much admired growing up. And so there was a large part of my life where I just, like, consumed a lot of, like, Muppet stuff. And it's been a while, but, like, I watched the Muppet movie this past year. And, man, it holds up. It's so funny. There's so many, like, zingers just back and forth. And so, actually, this would be up your alley. There are so many puns. So many puns. So many puns that, like, I watched it this year and I was like, I think I missed, like, 10 of these puns, like, the last time I watched this movie. So definitely, yeah, just weird humor. Really just, like, total silliness. And yeah, then it inspired me to get into indie.
There we go. Well, and I think something that you may not have considered in your answer that I think is also relevant, especially because we have this common theme of people with strange backstories and origin stories of how they got into games, is in the Muppet world, no one questions humans and Muppets being side by side and different.
Like, oh, 100%.
And I think the world, and I think that's the best part about these Muppet films.
Yeah, I think I also really appreciate that. Yeah, the whole story of that movie too is just literally just like Kermit's just like driving around going to Hollywood, and he just, you know, he picks up like Fozzie, and it's just like, hey, you want to go to Hollywood with me? I mean, it's kind of almost like this Wizard of Oz thing, only like the final destination being Hollywood. But it's just like there's just no question. It's just like, oh, hey, you want to, like, we're gonna go to Hollywood and be famous. And I mean, it does have this whole other layer for me, like going, like living in Los Angeles for a while and working in Hollywood in a way. Like, I mean, it is like the Hollywood painted in the Muppet movie is like so the opposite of what Hollywood really is. But I mean, it's like very intentional the way that that's framed. But it is like just like the spirit of just putting on a show with like really cool, interesting people, with like really people with eclectic backgrounds, I think is like the thing that I am very much drawn to, and like very much something that I think I will keep on doing, like, throughout, like, all my, whatever my career, wherever my career goes.
I love it. That is a very sincere answer. And now I feel like I need to watch it.
Oh my, please do. Like, please, and please tweet at me when you do watch it. Like, it is, now I might need to, like, rewatch it myself as I'm, like, advocating for it.
Because
I
mean, both watch it at the same time, live tweet our reaction.
There's the whole going to Hollywood story, but there's this whole other, like, a story about there's this guy who owns this like franchise of like frog leg restaurants that's trying to cast Kermit in his frog leg commercial, and Kermit's like, no man, I'm not, like, this is how Kermit talks, no dude, I'm not really into frog legs, I don't want to like do that, I want to actually do something that gives me joy, and I want to do something like with my friends that like makes me really happy, and it's like ultimately results in like a really intense showdown in the end. So I'm not going to spoil like how that ends, how that showdown, like what happens, but it does involve Kermit wearing a cowboy hat and giving a really good speech about friendship and happiness and pursuing your dreams.
Okay.
So
well, that's going on the to watch list.
Please.
All right, Joe. Well, now we're at the final question. We've discussed so many wonderful things today. And now we must
really run the gamut
truly
of topics.
We have. I mean, if variety is something you like, then this is the podcast episode for you. The final question: what is the one piece of advice that you would give to any storyteller, regardless of the medium?
I think the biggest thing that, I guess, like, my takeaway now, like, being a part of, like, this, the indie game scene, and then also working on my own personal projects now, and I guess the biggest thing I would tell people is to be curious about the world around you. And I'm not really sure that's, like, I guess it's kind of advice, but it's, like, I almost don't know, like, part of me sometimes, like, throughout life, like, you know, a lot of times, like, people have asked me, when we were working on God of Blades, and like we did pretty well like marketing it, and people were like, oh, like how did you learn to do all this stuff, and like how did, like, when you weren't working in marketing and stuff, and I was just like, oh, I just asked a lot of questions, and I just, like, you know, made myself kind of look like a dum-dum. Like, just be curious and earnestly be curious of like what other people are working on, and that's advice, but I kind of also sometimes feel like that's something like you can't really teach to someone. Like, you just really have to, like, and I'm not, I don't know if like, if, I don't think it's like just like a natural thing to be like, I mean, I think it partly is natural to be curious, but I also think like to instill curiosity in people, like I think the things like to really be a curious person is like you really have to be open to like looking like an idiot or, you know, just not being afraid of like not being afraid that a question you ask is too stupid or something. And I guess the reason why like this is so important for me is just like, as I was growing up and like just even throughout my 20s and stuff, like, I mean, this is like a recurring theme in a lot of the projects and things that I work on is that I definitely have like really navigated a lot of, neuroses and anxieties and like, believe it or not, like super shyness when I was like in high school and college and stuff. Like I know I've been saying so many words right now and I used to say no words.
From all of the words to no words.
Yeah, from no words to too many words. From no words to too many words, the Jill Lammert story. That's definitely
it's going to be the title of your biography.
Yeah, that's my next project coming out soon. I used to just be so cripplingly shy, and part of that reason was because like I wanted like I just was so like I internalized everything. Like I wanted to be curious, but I was like so scared to ask people things. And I was so scared. Like I was so like, I framed it always as just like internally, like I was just like, oh, they're going to think I'm stupid. And oh, they're going to think like, I'm doing something wrong. Or maybe what if I frame this question weird? And, this is kind of weird, but I actually think somewhere in my, in the past like decade or so, I kind of had this realization. Part of it, like starting up a game company, and being like, oh, I'm doing marketing stuff now. Cool. I don't know anything about marketing. So I guess when I go to these events, like I'm just going to talk to people and ask questions and stuff. And I think I realized like going to meetups and stuff, which, you know, very obviously like meetups run the gamut in terms of like what the vibe is and like how much you take from them or whatever. But like, at the end of the day, like they are always kind of like this like very weird setting where it's like, oh, I am like walking up and talking to people and like hearing their stories. And like, this is kind of like a weird structure, but also no one's really paying that much attention to me, which seems kind of like a really bleak, like realization, but actually is like really empowering because it's like, oh,
I don't have to worry about being stupid or asking the wrong question.
Entirely, like people are not like scrutinizing me in like the ways that I for so many years and still do, but like, you know, they're not scrutinizing me in the same way that I do. And so it's like kind of freeing that it's like, oh, like I can be this ridiculous person who does stuff in like indie video games, but I also bake bagels, but I also live in the desert and work in a coffee shop, and like and the Muppet Movie is the greatest story ever told, and like I can be this ridiculous person and it's fine because nobody's like, at least it's my hope that like at the end of the day at a meetup or something, they're not like, man, that person was so weird. Like they're really not paying attention. And I think that was like really freeing to me to be curious and to like, not only that, to like, I realized like I have found, at least like in a lot of like the like indie game community and stuff, is that there is like the spirit of curiosity and like enthusiasm for other people, I think actually helps people go really far. Like being curious and like why people are working on a project, what inspired them. All of that's been like really helpful for me in all of my work. But then also just taking like talking about like being a storyteller, I guess too, I think being curious and like what other people are doing in other people's lives, I think that also gives you like such a better understanding of your audience and like such a better understanding of just people around you. And I think that's kind of the key to being a good storyteller, is like understanding people.
I love it. Perfect answer.
Thanks. I think like, yeah, that's, you said it's perfect answer. I'm like, why am I still rambling?
It's all good. Well, that's what the campfire is about. Nothing in particular.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's also just like, I think like curiosity too. I think just being, you know, working in games, now I'm out here in Marfa, and this is definitely, I don't know how familiar people listening to the podcast start, but like Marfa is like a small town that is made up of a lot of different artists and creatives, and then also like ranchers and people who have lived out here for decades. But it's like, I feel like part of the reason why I'm out here is that like I find inspiration just like talking to people about their walks of life and the projects they're working on and like what led them out here to the desert, because similar to video games, there's tons of reasons why people have decided to move to this town in the middle of nowhere.
Absolutely. Well, everyone is on their own journey, and at the end of the day, we're just all convening and making some awesome games.
Yeah, and mine just happens to be in the desert right now and also making bagels.
Well, you will never be short of an icebreaker.
Thanks, I hope so. As long as I'm not cripplingly shy. That's like, as long as I start then just like, yeah, as long as I don't get too in my head.
Well, I actually found out the secret to networking at like parties and stuff. And like, I think the secret underlying message of networking is everyone hates it, but no one will actually be open about how much they hate it. So like for
right.
me, as it may not seem like it, but as a very textbook introvert, like things like GDC are wonderful and amazing and lovely, but they are so draining and stressful because you're around so many people you don't know, and it's like, oh, am I talking to the right people? What if I went to that group? And it's just like, it's so stressful if you are not a person that you would identify as yourself as just someone who goes into the crowd and is comfortable just meeting people. But my strategy is you circle the room, and near the edges, there will always guaranteed, no matter what event, what industry, whatever you're at, there will always be a couple stragglers, one or two people off to the side that look like they don't want to be in the group. And you go up to them and you say, man, you look like how I feel about networking.
That's interesting.
That is how I met some contractors that I ended up using.
Oh, totally. Well, I mean, and it's so funny too. Like I am very much like, I am definitely a super, super extrovert. And yet with that said, like networking, the quote unquote networking gives me like so much anxiety. I've learned the best ways to navigate that are, like I said, like number one, like accept that it's, that networking is a very weird structure and everyone thinks it's weird and it's just weird in general. So like lean into that weird shit, like just be like, this is weird. Like, let's just lean into this. And like, everybody is like stuck in their head, so it's fine. But then also like, I think part of it, is just like, I mean, I totally just lost my train of thought just thinking about how weird networking is. the other point I was going to make, networking, super weird. And that's why also the other is I just hate the word networking like a lot, because I think there's just so much grossness attached to it in a lot of ways. Like there's a lot of sliminess. And I think part of it, kind of going back to like my Muppet mentality, which I will say I have maybe given too many PowerPoint presentations that have Muppet slides on them. But I think part of it is like, for me, I much rather prefer to like frame it as like making friends and like getting to know people rather than like, I mean, and I know it's like somebody might say like, that's like the same thing. Like networking is essentially doing that in some ways, but I'm like, well, if I frame it as like, oh, I'm just going to meet a bunch of cool, interesting people and hear about them and like maybe befriend them, like that's way easier for me to deal with than being like, I am going to network.
I agree.
So
no, I think that is the philosophy to go into it with, because otherwise you just get stressed thinking, like I said, all those other questions like, oh, am I meeting the right people? Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's like, you never know who you're going to encounter. Like, I think anybody who like goes into an event with like, these are the people I must meet. Like, it's like, okay, well, already like you're making networking even weirder, like coming in with a list. But also it's just like, there are so many people with so many different interesting backgrounds. Like the people that I have worked with and like throughout my adult life who have been like super, super important to me and super important to shaping like my career are people that like on paper, it might not seem like a complementary fit. Like they might be doing something totally different, or they might be doing, they might not be in the same field as me, but like they've been important in a number of ways, whether it's like ultimately we cross paths and we're able to join forces on a project, or they might just, you know, kind of be like a really amazing mentor to me. So like never just when you go to meet people, like just kind of, I like to just assume that everybody is interesting and has their story. So yeah.
And that concludes the Storyteller Campfire.
Oh, man. I realized my last sentence I did say, so yeah, which now I'm going to...
You walked right into that.
Oh, I'm so frustrated. I was doing so good. And now, I totally bookended my whole conversation with, so yeah. Oh, well. What are you going to do?
Oh, well. What are you going to do? That's what the campfire is all about. Nothing in particular.
Right. Exactly.
Well, Joe, that brings us to the end of our episode, and I've had a good time. I appreciate all of the wonderful questions, or the wonderful answers to.
Well, I appreciate all the wonderful questions, because we definitely have, like I said, we totally have run the gamut in terms of topics, and that's kind of the cool. Yeah, that's definitely the cool thing about the space of like indie game dev is like I feel like there's passion and interest in like all so many different types of things. So. Yeah, this is a podcast about Gilmore Girls and the Muppet Movie and also bagels.
So for the three people on Earth who are interested.
And camping. If you're interested in all those things, please, we definitely need to be friends as soon as possible.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Joe, where can people find you if they want to know more about your work and what you're doing?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter. My screen name is, well, I have two names. I'm Joe Lammert on Twitter. That's my personal account. I also have my bagel project, which is Joe Bagel, and you can find that at joebagel.com or also on my Twitter, which is at Joe Bagel blog. And so I didn't really get into extreme details about that, but essentially that's like a side project of mine where right now I'm trying to perfect the New York bagel in the West Texas desert. So it's pretty somehow it totally blends into a lot of my game dev work, which is again another thing that like I never saw coming, but like last GDC I talked about Joe Bagel so much, and I think it was so important for meeting a lot of people in the games community, which is incredibly weird, but that's again how games go.
That's how games go. We don't understand how they work or why they work, but sometimes they do, and we just keep moving on.
Right. And sometimes they involve bagels and you just don't ask, you just keep going.
Exactly. Well, at that point, no questions are necessary because, I mean, we've achieved perfection.
Definitely.
All right, Joe. Well, thank you so much for gathering around the campfire with us.
Awesome, man. Thanks a lot. This has been a blast.